Plenty of showers and that biting northerly wind. It may read 12 or 13. It'll feel like 6 or 7. I wish you a peaceful night. Good night.
All right, Benny, thanks. Phil Avery. The Nobel laureate Seamus Heaney died last month. In this recording, he reads part 8 of his translation of the epic Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf. Back at home in Geatland in King Hylak's hall, Beowulf tells of his victories in the land of the Danes to an eager audience. He is rewarded with a sword and land, but a less happy time was soon to follow.
A lot was to happen in later days in the fury of battle. Hylak fell, and the shelter of Heardred's shield proved useless against the fierce aggression of the Scylfings. Ruthless swordsmen, seasoned campaigners, they came against him and his conquering nation, and with cruel force cut him down, so that afterwards the wide kingdom reverted to Beowulf. He ruled it well for 50 winters, grew old and wise as warden of the land, until one began to dominate the dark, a dragon on the prowl from the steep vaults of a stone-roofed barrow where he guarded a hoard. There was a hidden passage unknown to men, but someone managed to enter by it and interfere with the heathen trove. He handled and removed a gem-studded goblet. It gained him nothing, though with a thief's wiles he had outwitted the sleeping dragon. That drove him into rage, as the people of that country would soon discover. The intruder who broached the dragon's treasure and moved him to wrath had never meant to. It was desperation on the part of a slave fleeing the heavy hand of some master, guilt-ridden and on the run, going to ground. But he soon began to shake with terror. In shock, the wretch panicked and ran away with the precious metalwork. There were many other heirlooms heaped inside the earth house, because long ago, with deliberate care, some forgotten person had deposited the whole rich inheritance of a high-born race in that ancient cache. Death had come and taken them all in times gone by, and the one surviving witness of their fate, the last veteran, could envisage only the same fate for himself. He foresaw that his joy in the treasure would be brief. A newly constructed barrow stood waiting on a wide headland close to the waves, its entryway secured. Into it the keeper of the hoard had carried all the goods and golden ware worth preserving. His words were few. "Now, earth, hold what earls once held, and heroes can no more. It was mined from you first by honourable men. My own people have been ruined in war. One by one they went down to death, looked their last on sweet life in the hall. I am left with nobody to bear a sword or burnish plated goblets, put a sheen on the cup. The companies have departed. The hard helmet, hasped with gold, will be stripped of its hoops, and the helmet shiner, who should polish the metal of the war mask, sleeps. The coat of mail that came through all fights, through shield collapse and cut of sword, decays with the warrior. Nor may webbed mail range far and wide on the warlord's back beside his mustered troops. No trembling harp, no tuned timber, no tumbling hawk swerving through the hall, no swift horse pawing the courtyard. Pillage and slaughter have emptied the earth of entire peoples." And so he mourned as he moved about the world, deserted and alone, lamenting his unhappiness day and night, until death's flood brimmed up in his heart. Then an old harrower of the dark happened to find the hoard open, the burning one who hunts out barrows, the slick-skinned dragon threatening the night sky with streamers of fire. People on the farms are in dread of him. He is driven to hunt out hoards underground, to guard heathen gold through age-long vigils, though to little avail. For 3 centuries, this scourge of the people had stood guard on that stoutly protected underground treasury, until the intruder unleashed its fury. He hurried to his lord with the gold-plated cup and made his plea to be reinstated. Then the vault was rifled, the ring hoard robbed, and the wretched man had his request granted. His master gazed on that find from the past for the first time. When the dragon awoke, trouble flared again. He rippled down the rock, writhing with anger, when he saw the footprints of the prowler who had stolen too close to his dreaming head. So may a man not marked by fate easily escape exile and woe by the grace of God. The horde guardian scorched the ground as he scoured and hunted for the trespasser who had troubled his sleep. Hot and savage, he kept circling and circling the outside of the mound. No man appeared in that desert waste, but he worked himself up by imagining battle. Then back in he'd go in search of the cup, only to discover signs that someone had stumbled upon the golden treasures. So the guardian of the mound, the hoard watcher, waited for the gloaming with fierce impatience. His pent-up fury at the loss of the vessel made him long to hit back and lash out in flames. Then, to his delight, the day waned, and he could wait no longer behind the wall, but hurtled forth in a fiery blaze. The first to suffer were the people on the land, but before long it was their treasure-giver who would come to grief. The dragon began to belch out flames and burn bright homesteads. There was a hot glow that scared everyone, for the vile sky-winger would leave nothing alive in his wake. Everywhere the havoc he wrought was in evidence. Far and near, the Geat nation bore the brunt of his brutal assaults and virulent hate. Then back to the hoard he would dart before daybreak to hide in his den. He had swinged the land, swathed it in flame, in fire and burning, and now he felt secure in the vaults of his barrow. But his trust was unavailing. Then Beowulf was given bad news, a hard truth. His own home, the best of buildings, had been burnt to a cinder, the throne room of the Geats. It threw the hero into deep anguish and darkened his mood. The wise man thought he must have thwarted ancient ordinance of the Eternal Lord, broken his commandment. His mind was in turmoil. Unaccustomed anxiety and gloom confused his brain. The fire dragon had razed the coastal region and reduced forts and earthworks to dust and ashes. So the war king planned and plotted his revenge. The warrior's protector, prince of the hall troop, ordered a marvellous all-iron shield from his smithy works. He well knew that linden boards would let him down and timber burn. After many trials, he was destined to face the end of his days in this mortal world, as was the dragon, for all his long leasehold on the treasure. The veteran king sat down on the cliff top. He wished good luck to the Geats who had shared his hearth and his gold. He was sad at heart, unsettled yet ready, sensing his death. His fate hovered near, unknowable but certain. It would soon claim his coffered soul, part life from limb. Before long, the prince's spirit would spin free from his body. Beowulf spoke, made a formal boast for the last time. I risked my life often when I was young. Now I am old, but as king of the people, I shall pursue this fight for the glory of winning. If the evil one will abandon his fort and face me in the open. Then he addressed each dear companion one final time, those fighters in their helmets, resolute and high-born. I would rather not use a weapon if I knew another way to grapple with the dragon and make good my boast as I did against Grendel in days gone by. But I shall be meeting molten venom in the fire he breathes, so I go forth in mail shirt and shield. I won't shift a foot when I meet the cave guard. What occurs on the wall between the two of us will turn out as fate, overseer of men, decides. I am resolved. I scorn further words against this sky-born foe. Men-at-arms, remain here on the barrow, safe in your armour, to see which one of us is better in the end at bearing wounds in a deadly fray. This fight is not yours, nor is it up to any man except me to measure his strength against the monster or to prove his worth. I shall win the gold by my courage, or else mortal combat, doom of battle, will bear your lord away. Then he drew himself up beside his shield. The fabled warrior in his war shirt and helmet trusted in his own strength entirely and went under the crag. No coward path. Hard by the rock face, that hale veteran, a good man who had gone repeatedly into combat in danger and come through, saw a stone arch and a gushing stream that burst from the barrow, blazing and wafting a deadly heat. It would be hard to survive unscathed near the hoard, to hold firm against the dragon in those flaming depths. Then he gave a shout. The Lord of the Geats unburdened his breast and broke out in a storm of anger. Under the grey stone, his voice challenged and resounded clearly. Hate was ignited. The horde guard recognized a human voice. The time was over for peace and parleying. Pouring forth in a hot battle fume, the breath of the monster burst from the rock. There was a rumble underground. Down there in the barrow, Beowulf the warrior lifted his shield. The outlandish thing writhed and convulsed and vehemently turned on the king, whose keen-edged sword, an heirloom inherited by ancient right, was already in his hand. Roused to a fury, each antagonist struck terror in the other. Unyielding, the lord of his people loomed by his tall shield, sure of his ground, while the serpent looped and unleashed itself. Swaddled in flames, it came gliding and flexing and racing towards its fate. Yet his shield defended the renowned leader's life and limb for a shorter time than he meant it to. That final day was the first time when Beowulf fought and fate denied him glory in battle. So the king of the Geats raised his hand and struck hard at the enameled scales, but scarcely cut through. The blade flashed and slashed, yet the blow was far less powerful than the hard-pressed king had need of at that moment. The moundkeeper went into a spasm and spouted deadly flames. When he felt the stroke, battle fire billowed and spewed. Beowulf was foiled of a glorious victory. The glittering sword, infallible before that day, failed when he unsheathed it, as it never should have. For the son of Edstho, it was no easy thing to have to give ground like that and go unwillingly to inhabit another home in a place beyond. So every man must yield the leasehold of his days.
Seamus Heaney was reading from his translation of the Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf. You can hear part 9 at the same time tomorrow morning. Beowulf was produced in Salford by Susan Roberts. Now, here's Sailing By to take us to the shipping forecast. Thank you. Now, on BBC Radio 4, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Thursday, the 10th of October. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Atsara, South Atsara, Forties, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, German Bight, Humber, Thames, Dover, Irish Sea, Malin, Hebrides and Fair Isle. The general synopsis at 1800. Low 40s, 1005, expected German Bight, 1007 by 1800 Thursday. High, 150 miles west of Rockall, 1033, expected Rockall with little change by same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Atsara, South Atsara. Northerly or northeasterly 7 to severe gale 9, decreasing 5 or 6 later. Showers, more